This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Wiki's creators have said the way it will now have to follow new rules enforced by Ofcom could harm the platform and actually lead to bad actors spreading false information. It's because Wikipedia would fall into a Category 1, meaning it will have to follow stricter rules. Category 1 platforms are those with more than 34 million users, or more than 50% of the UK population. Content moderation and user verification will be required, and it's the user checking Wikipedia has taken issue with.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. I must admit that I'm not quite sure how this has happened, but somehow this is the 250th episode of this podcast series. I'm grateful to the many guests, thousands of listeners, and the background support from Gerardo Lebrun LeBoy as this initiative just keeps going and going. For the 250th episode, I'm delighted to welcome Jan Gerlach, Wikimedia's Director of Public Policy, who leads its EU advocacy work, including efforts regarding the UK Online Safety Act. Now, this is particularly relevant in a Canadian context, since this work has touched on issues such as user identification, platform regulation, and the rules surrounding AI. Jan joins me on the podcast for a wide-ranging discussion on these issues, providing insight into some of the risks and challenges associated with digital policy reform. Jan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor to be here. My colleagues in the legal department asked me to tell you that you have a lot of friends at Wikimedia and a lot of fans.
Okay, that's great to know. Thanks for that. And hopefully they're following along, because Canada has been going through, you know, some really important and controversial digital policy issues. And they often cite the UK or EU as an inspiration. Frankly, Australia sometimes. I mean, really, it's a sort of a global scan oftentimes when we get into issues. And that would include a current Senate bill that includes mandated age verification. That's Bill S-209 for regular listeners of the podcast. There's been online harms proposals that have borne some real similarity to the EU and UK laws. And of course, there's AI regulation. I want to touch a bit on, frankly, all of those things. But before we do that, Wikimedia has been deeply involved in many of these policy issues, and I think your experience can be pretty instructive. Why don't we start with this? Obviously, everyone listening to this will know and will have used Wikipedia. Can you describe Wikimedia, the role it plays, and how it engages on digital policy?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. It's actually an important one, right? As you pointed out, everybody knows Wikipedia. I work at the Wikimedia Foundation, which is the organization, the nonprofit based in San Francisco that hosts and supports Wikipedia. But Wikimedia is more than just Wikipedia. It's a movement of people that contributes to free knowledge. And the Wikimedia Foundation hosts other projects, other platforms that are basically maintained by a global community of volunteers. This includes Wikidata, which is a structured data repository. It also includes Wikimedia Commons, which is a platform for audiovisual content, and others. And so when we say Wikimedia, we mean all of that. The Wikimedia Foundation is my employer and where I work, and we host Wikipedia and all the other projects. But obviously we often use Wikipedia as shorthand for everything here. But yeah, obviously this open encyclopedia is what's best known.
Okay. No, that's interesting with that broader umbrella. So how does it engage on the digital policy front?
Yeah. So Wikipedia is a platform, you know, it's a website that people contribute knowledge to, where they make edits, they upload content. And as such, Wikipedia is affected by digital policy, by internet regulation. And we at the foundation, but also people in our movement, this includes affiliates, professionals in the policy space also, and volunteers, we engage on digital policy that could affect Wikipedia's ability to well, basically exist, but also thrive and grow, right? And we really are looking very closely at laws around the world and regulation that affects people's ability to access Wikipedia, to read, to contribute to it, and things that affect freedom of expression in the world and privacy also affect Wikipedia.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, that sort of hits the sweet spot in terms of some of these issues. Why don't we start first with age verification, which obviously can have an impact on access, and in particular the UK approach to the issue, because I know Wikimedia was engaged with that, and I wanted to talk a bit about it. First, can you just tell our listeners what the UK enacted with respect to age verification?
Yeah, sure. Well, the UK has enacted the Online Safety Act, which, as the name says, is supposed to make people safer online. But it's not just age verification. Basically, there's a huge chunk in there that requires not just age verification, but actually identity verification. And from a Wikimedia perspective, anything that harms people's privacy, but also their right to be pseudonymous on the internet and on Wikipedia, which is to say, to contribute to Wikipedia under a pseudonym, under a username that they choose, is actually problematic because it means that they are sort of giving up some of their ability to add content in a safe manner, without being sort of persecuted for it or without being threatened. And this may sound sort of hypothetical, theoretical in the context of some countries, like, I don't know, in the Western world. But as I mentioned, Wikimedia is a global movement and there are volunteers around the world, including in countries with less protections for freedom of expression. And we're really thinking about them as well, about their safety. Because if we have to collect the identity or data on people from around the world, it's them in places with less protections that are actually at risk. And so when we look at the Online Safety Act in the UK, we're really worried about the implications, not just for the UK, but for people around the world.
That global perspective is interesting. So obviously you had concerns. Did you get involved in the legislative process as the bill was being debated?
We certainly did. This bill has been debated forever before it was enacted, and over time it also changed. It started with a duty of care, and then went to sort of age gating, making sure that people that children under a certain age are not exposed to certain content that is deemed harmful. Then, as I said, includes rules around identity verification. And along the way, we engaged with lawmakers, with the government, but also with the regulator, Ofcom, who is now supposed to implement large parts of the bill, of the act. And we have, along the way, also voiced our concerns and really explained how Wikipedia works, because often that's the crux of our advocacy, explaining to people who think of the large social media platforms only that Wikipedia is also a platform, right? And that it works in completely different ways. There are no ads. There's no systems that push content on you because your uncle thought XYZ was a thing and then shared that with you a while ago, right? And there are no opinions on Wikipedia, right? So it's wildly different, and it's also not for profit, which just changes the whole architecture and also governance systems. So our biggest job along the way in the Online Safety Bill, until it became an act, and in most other laws, actually, in other processes, is really explaining how Wikipedia works and how it's different from those platforms that may be the targets, right? We often used to say, look, Wikipedia is sort of the dolphin, and when you like try to like throw out a net and catch like the, say, bad platforms, make sure that the dolphin isn't caught up in this as bycatch, right? We also call this the Wikipedia test. Make sure that you test your laws, your bills against Wikipedia to make sure the open source internet, the sort of smaller forums, etc., are not harmed in the wake.
Okay, that's interesting. So, did when the law ultimately passes, did it pass the test?
It certainly didn't. No, we have grave concerns with parts of the law, including that identity verification, as I said. And we also brought a legal challenge against it this past summer, 2025. And yeah, we're definitely not of the opinion that it passes the Wikipedia test.
Okay. So what happened with that court challenge?
Well, that challenge was ac actually against a specific part of the bill. We brought human rights concerns against a part that defines Category 1 platforms and their duties. Category 1 platforms have specific duties, including that identity verification that I've now mentioned repeatedly. But those platforms are sort of supposed to be the riskiest ones, right? And unfortunately, how they're defined is not by their actual risk, but by how many users they reach and a few other functions that they have, like recommender systems or sharing abilities. Wikipedia has not been designated as such as a Category 1 platform yet, though it may be. And we're really worried that this puts our users at risk, and the human rights implications brought us to decide to bring a challenge. And we actually did so with a user in the UK who is affected by this.
Okay.
And ultimately, unfortunately, the decision didn't go the way we wanted it to. The court basically said that there we didn't have standing, but acknowledged that there were human rights concerns. Ultimately, the decision was sort of kicked down the road a little bit, the can, the proverbial can. But we're really happy about the acknowledgement of the human rights concerns in there, actually.
Okay, so interesting. So what then comes next? Is there appeal or is there ability to bring a new case? Is there any further challenges ahead?
No, there's what's next is really that the court has basically left the ball in the well, also again the court of the regulator and the government to make changes to address these concerns, and hopefully there will be safeguards implemented.
Interesting. Are there, just out of curiosities, are there other countries that face or that you fit that have established these kinds of rules so that you face similar kinds of restrictions in terms of who's able to use the platform or the requirements to identify themselves in certain ways in order to use the platform?
Yeah, we often use the term policy contagion. It seems online safety laws or child safety laws are basically popping up everywhere around the world, not just in the UK or in Europe. They're really all over the map, and many of them try to sort of implement some sort of age verification, maybe identity verification systems. We've recently seen a really good example, though, just a proposed bill so far out of Switzerland that is not really an online safety bill, but it's sort of a platform responsibility bill that explicitly carves out not-for-profit purposes among platforms, so to not catch those dolphins, really. And the comments, the government's comments in Switzerland around that bill actually mentioned Wikipedia explicitly. So we're really happy about that. And this just shows it can be done, right? To carve out platforms that serve a public interest, right?
Okay. No, that's interesting. And certainly that contagion has spread to Canada, as I was mentioning, both with respect to the online verification bill or age verification bill with respect to pornography platforms. But it's much broader than that. The online harms bill, even lawful access elements in terms of the police powers to gain access, sometimes warrantless access to information in Canada. The rationale that's often given by government has to do with online safety and children and the like. So everyone understands why you'd want to address those issues, but sometimes it feels like sort of just the entry point for a whole series of different rules that raise assortment of issues.
Right.
Now, speaking of, that Wikipedia test and specifically targeting or excluding you, I thought we might talk about the EU's DSA as well and its regulation of VLOPs. How does Wikimedia find itself engaged in the DSA?
Well, Wikimedia has been engaged with the DSA for a long time. Actually, we also tried to give input along the way when the DSA was still just a bill going through the institutions in Brussels. And today, Wikipedia is categorized as a VLOP, as a very large online platform. And we comply with the DSA. And the DSA is different from other laws that we've just been discussing, because it leaves room for different platform governance systems. I want to remind you that Wikipedia, as we said, is very different from social media platforms that we often think about in this context, right? Where the platform really has a lot of power to shape content, to moderate content. And in Wikipedia's case, it's really the users who make decisions about content. Sometimes those decisions can be slow, and slower than some people might like them to be, and we at the foundation really don't interfere in those decision-making processes, and the DSA we find leaves room for that. It really leaves room to comply with its rules with a different operational model for a platform. So yeah, we're happy about that, and are complying to our best. To the best of our abilities, and obviously sometimes this creates a burden and is challenging, but I think we're faring pretty well so far.
That's interesting. Now, speaking of compliance, I believe last year you had your first audit under this system. Can you describe a little bit what that involves? And, did it lead to any changes, or is it more just the process that you have to go through?
Well, such an audit really captures basically all of our compliance with essentially all DSA requirements. An auditor looks at internal documentation, examples of how we deal with content moderation takedowns, and how we assess and mitigate systemic risks under the DSA. This includes disinformation, for instance. And there are recommendations in there. In the audit report that is submitted to regulators, we look at these recommendations holistically, and try to work with them within our systems, right? Often auditors aren't Wikipedia experts in a way. That doesn't mean that they're not doing great work, but just saying I want to say this to illustrate that recommendations may not be like tailored perfectly to how the Wikimedia movement, for instance, works. But yeah, we've looked at those recommendations, and we always strive to improve anyway, right? We want to be a good citizen of the internet in a way, right? And we're not here to make a profit. We're here to serve the people who read Wikipedia and who write Wikipedia. So if those recommendations actually help us improve, then we all win.
Okay, interesting. Finally, why don't we turn to AI, which of course has really become sort of the giant when we're thinking about a lot of different policies out there. Obviously, Wikipedia is super popular when it comes to scraping purposes to be used for large language models and the like. Now, you've called for companies to use a paid API instead. Can you explain a little bit what's happening with respect to Wikipedia and AI and what you guys think is at stake?
Wikipedia really is popular, and not just among humans, but also among bots, I would say. Wikipedia is the largest body of human verified content, right? That is on the internet, is updated regularly, and is freely licensed. So we see a lot of activity from companies scraping our content for chatbots that generate answers to people's questions. And over time, this has really led to a huge increase in traffic from bots for us, and that translates into server costs. We host all our content ourselves. It doesn't sit on anybody else's cloud, so it doesn't go down when somebody else's cloud goes down. But also that means that we can protect people's privacy better, right? And that cost, however, is, as the word says, not free to us, right? And we really encourage operators of LLMs and AI chatbots to consider using our, as you said, professional API, to be sure we're not selling our content, right? We're basically selling access to a fatter, a thicker pipe in a way, right? Our normal API is always going to be free, and people can use our content as they wish and access it. But for those largest, really reusers of our content, it's so much better to use the professional API and then opt into a agreement with us to pay for that as well. And yeah, that way they get a service level agreement as well. And I want to mention that it's not just about the money, though. We really need AI operators to also give attribution to Wikipedia, because we're very concerned with the long-term sustainability of our model of volunteers writing content, right? And the theory of change here is really that only when people actually find to their way to Wikipedia, because they sort of think about where does this answer come from, what content is being cited here, do they actually engage with the knowledge and participate in the knowledge, and ultimately they can become volunteers and contributors, right? There's a big concern that if they're cut off from Wikipedia because there's no attribution, which by the way the Creative Commons license of course asks for, that they're cut off from Wikipedia and will never actually become contributors. And that is a huge problem for the long-term sustainability of the project.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess I'm curious. Are you seeing some big changes in that regard? I think, for example, if someone puts in a search query into Google, and for quite some time, the sort of a summary linking back to Wikipedia was one of the most prominent things that you would find. Now, you still find that, but for many users, they also now get a Gemini AI-based summary that may incorporate some of that Wikipedia content and perhaps some other sort of content. And in some ways, that does certainly feel substitutable, I think, for a lot of people just who at a minimum are just trying to gain some basic information. Previously, the Wikipedia element was very prominent. Now it seems like AI is becoming more and more prominent.
Right. I think we're just at the beginning of our journey there. Like, we're trying to understand what's going on. And it seems to me, at least, that it's also different per query and also from where you make it, like per country as well. I think what you're also asking about is traffic, right? People talk about the traffic apocalypse. We're not seeing dramatic drops or catastrophic drops in traffic yet. But we do know that some sites out there with content that host content have really struggled. Again, in the long term, attribution will be really, really important, so people can actually engage with what's behind the answers that they get and help contribute. And I think we live in a time right now when human verification of content is all the more important, and I think the value is seen more and more by everyday people who haven't so far thought about where their content comes from. But I think that the conversation is starting to shift where people point out, but actually, where does this come from, right? And how can you make sure that this is not just some AI slop, right?
Right. Now, speaking of AI slop and more particularly AI regulation, there it feels as if we're in the midst of a bit of a rethink. As we record this, there's expectation we'll see some changes in the EU AI Act, or at least in how it's being applied in the coming days. Canada certainly has been rethinking what it previously was thinking about when it came to AI regulation, which was largely to mirror what was taking place in the in Europe. And part of this, of course, is a response to the US, where it feels like a lot of the guardrails, at least federally, are being removed. Canada, I know, is struggling a little bit to pick a lane and figure out precisely where it lands. Where does Wikimedia land when it comes to some of these AI regulation proposals?
Well, we normally only have the capacity to engage on proposals that directly affect Wikimedia. This means that in the EU AI Act, we've monitored, we've watched closely, but ultimately found that this is not really affecting us and our operations and our users so much. Obviously, everybody's affected by AI, but we didn't see that we were caught up in sort of the definitions of high risk applications, etc. And generally, AI regulation or we're mostly concerned with AI regulation when it comes to attribution or like when it's about the content, right? But also, we definitely need to make sure that there are guardrails and safeguards for people's expression online and their privacy, right? Because only when people are safe online, they can trust that they're engaging with truthful content, can they also be contributors to Wikipedia. So this sounds maybe a bit selfish, but we as a nonprofit really only have the capacity to work on regulations that affect our work directly. And also that's what our donors, we're a donor funded organization. That's what our donors need to trust in, that we actually are focused on that.
Okay, I mean, so it's interesting that there are some lines to be drawn in terms of the issues that you get involved with and issues that you don't. Why don't we close with this? For the issues that you do get involved with, in many respects, you occupy such a potentially powerful position, not necessarily one-on-one with respect to legislators. You talked about some of the efforts that you've undertaken in some places, sometimes with success, sometimes less so, but with such a large user base, it's one of the most popular platforms on the internet. The ability to, get engagement and get people to speak out is something that quite clearly the platform could be leveraged to do if you decided to do it. So I guess I'm curious, to what extent is, do you use Wikipedia to help engage and, or at least make people aware of policy activity, perhaps try to get them to get involved in that, and sort of how do you make, if you do, how do you make decisions around what you will get involved with and what you won't in terms of really getting that user base engaged?
Yeah, that's such a great but also tricky question, right? To explain here where we come from. We are definitely interested in policy, right? But it's mostly internet policy that affects us, as I said, that affects us directly. At the same time, there is this big platform, right? That, as you said, has such a huge audience. But we need to be really sure that the foundation hosts and operates Wikipedia. We do not actually really own it. It's the movement that does, right? And there's a lot of agency and sense of ownership among the volunteers who contribute and put their energy into making sure that it's factual and that there's a balance of how things are presented. And one of the most important principles of Wikipedia is actually the neutral point of view within article content, right? When Wikipedians decide in the past, they have decided to, in the past, to use banners, for instance, for a certain cause within a country, not necessarily globally. And you may recall that in the Sopa-Pipa days, for those who remember those days, there was a blackout, right? But that was not a decision by the foundation to just sort of like pull a plug, right? This was a broad community decision that led to that. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter whether I think we should be using banners or so, but it's really about what the community thinks. And we want to be very, very careful about engaging on any policy that goes beyond digital policy there anyway. But we need to really protect, I believe, the trust into this platform that we have and that we all love, because I think that's the most precious thing that we have, and we don't want to risk that. That doesn't mean that I may not have personal opinions, right? But I'm here as a public policy director for Wikimedia, and I'm very focused on internet policy. And the way we engage on that is mostly through submissions, through educational materials, and we attend conferences and engage with stakeholders there. And but Wikipedia itself is not our go-to tool for that. If it was at stake and at risk for its very existence at some point, who knows what will happen there, right? But normally that's not how we operate.
Okay. Interesting. I certainly do remember the SOPA days, of course. And
Yeah.
it's striking that there may be the occasional instance of that kind of engagement based on your community's views, but by and large, both in terms of Wikimedia's participation over the years, and it's certainly, I think, reflected in this discussion. It's a really thoughtful public policy participation that's narrowly tailored and focused on the kinds of issues that more directly affect the platform, your users, and some of the core principles, which I think is so important. So thank you for that work that you've been doing, and thank you, of course, for taking the time to come and join me on the podcast.
A great honor. Thank you, Michael.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca, or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.